Welcome to the DDHD podcast. Hey. My name is Marwan Monomany and I'm joined by my co-host,
Rochester.
And we got a very, very special guest today.
Very excited today, man.
Man, dreams don't have deadlines because we've been wanting someone like this since we started the podcast.
Yeah, she's been dodging us for a while.
A long time. We're not popular yet, but
just
it's okay.
Kidding.
We trapped her here. She's here by choice.
Lock the door.
No, but we have a registered psychotherapist and the official mental health clinician for the Toronto Raptors. Let's give it up for the one and only Janelle Peterson.
Oh, goodness. Thank you. Thank you.
How are you doing? Thank you for being here. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
Glad I made it in.
Yes, absolutely. And for the audience, for people that don't know, can you explain what exactly you do?
The easiest way for me to put it, what I do is I honestly help people explore like the challenging parts of life that I think that they find navigating. Mm-hmm. And I say this because sometimes they could be good things that you're trying to navigate, and sometimes they're more difficult. Yeah. So I am that person that can help you make sense of when things are hard. And I love what I do. I love the opportunity that I get to have. So that's the best way to sum up what it is for me.
Okay, amazing.
Love it. And you're like glowing all over the place too.
Well,
like,
thank you.
Yeah, looking great. I love it. We might have to book a therapy session too, just so we can hang out because like your energy is just like has taken over this whole building right now in the best way possible.
Oh, I appreciate it. I mean, you guys started it. I just came and said, let me, you know, just
sprinkle.
It's great.
For those that want to find you, and where can they find you online, on socials?
Yeah, you can definitely find me online. I'm probably the only Janelle with a J-H in it. So
okay.
Ahead, type that in, J-H-A-N-E-L-L-E, Peter Psychotherapy, and you'll find me. Go on a website if you want to book a consultation with or talk to me or somebody else at the practice. I think one of the great things about what I do is that it expands to beyond me to create a practice for people of color specifically to make sure that it gets supported.
Oh, that's amazing.
So dope.
So amazing. So how long have you been in the industry?
I've been working in like social services, helping people for about 10 years now. Then while I was in that space, I was like, I literally am tired of helping people like at the end of their journey. So I used to work in housing and I would deal with like when people are getting evicted. So like that's the end of the road for many people. And I was I'm so tired of like hearing people's stories here. And they're like, oh, if only I had talked to you like before, if only I had somebody else to share this with, like maybe I would have had another way of looking at it. And I was like, I want to be that person. I want to be the person that helps somebody more so in the beginning. So I went back to school and I said, let's do this. And now it's been about 3.5 years of just being a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad like I pivoted to find another way to help people in the space.
So good.
It's amazing. And how are you from Toronto?
Born and raised.
All right. What part?
So I literally am a downtown chick to like, you know, to the core.
To the core.
grew up in the Espenon.
Okay, that is as downtown as it gets.
Yep. Like most black families in Toronto, I got moved to Brampton.
Oh, wow.
So I did the trek and spent high school in the suburbs. Shout out Notre Dame.
Hey.
And you said you were part of the housing program when you were growing up?
Yeah. Okay. So I lived in housing. And this is a funny thing that I think a lot of people don't know is I didn't know in the very beginning that I lived in housing. Mm. Right? Like, I think it happens to a lot of kids that go through that space. It's just community. It's fun. It's people. And your parents most of the time do a really good job of not letting you know that there's anything different happening.
That's true.
And it wasn't until I started like getting older and maybe learning more things. I'm like, oh, the little orange sign on this building is the same thing. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Right. And to be able to work in that space after, to be able to support that space. And then like we were talking about early, come around and now speak about it from a mental health lens that space is really, really dope for me.
Mm. Wow.
Was that the inspiration of you getting into it, or was it just...
Oh, you don't even want to know how I ended up here. I didn't plan. It was one of those things. I did not plan on being here. Like,
right.
I went to school to be a, like, child doctor.
Oh, okay.
Wanted to be a pediatrician.
Yeah.
Okay. Still helping people.
Now I help grown-ass... Oh, can I... I was going to say grown-ass people. I help grown-ass people now.
Yeah.
No little children.
Yeah.
And yeah, I didn't plan on doing it. I was in the program and when I was there, I was just like working in the hospital, doing some stuff in the States. I went to school in Alabama. And I was just like, wait a minute. Like, is this the only place where you can help people? And growing up, like, you know, you hear your parents talk about you could be a doctor, a lawyer, like, you know, the top 3-4 jobs. Yeah. And I was like, I think I want to do something else. And that was a hard pivot to tell your family that
I'm sure
all the money you put into school, I have other plans for it. It's not that.
Been but there. Mm-hmm.
They're all smiling because it worked out, right? It turned out differently. And like you said earlier, I'm still helping people to some extent.
Yeah, I can imagine.
No, not to some extent. I feel like you are helping people.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thanks.
For real. Alabama?
Yeah.
Okay. How'd you end up there?
So my life now, I have to laugh every time I say things first because it's interesting.
Right.
So my family, I have family that lives in the South, mm-hmm. and I went for like homecoming weekend at university, and I was just like, oh, this is dope. I love a different world. I've been watching a different world from like day one. Exactly.
That's right.
And so I was like, do we have this in Tejano? No, I don't think so. But then when I went there, I was like, oh, this is a different world. Like, mm-hmm. I want to go to school here. I want to be part of it. Little do you know, homecoming is not every day. It's one time. It happens one time. So I was like, ooh, I'm going to sign up and go to school here. And I did that, realized it's not every day, but enjoyed it.
Okay.
It was truly an amazing experience going to HBCU. Hands down, would never trade that. And so, yeah, really happy I went through that.
I could see you the second day of school. You still have your homecoming dress. You're like, all right, we're ready for the second round. What's up?
Where's Jada Pinkett at, yo?
We're like, where's the drums?
Yeah,
like,
where's drums
all the
people? At? Wade, where you at? Wade.
And they're like, yeah, so you're going to go to class over here? And I'm like, and there's no music to escort me?
Yeah.
So, learned it, did it, but.
And then you came back to Toronto.
And I came back to Toronto after.
Started your career.
Worked in housing, and I was like, I didn't want to go to med school. And I was figuring out what I wanted to do. Got a job at housing. Right. I said, I'm only gonna work here for 2 years. Like, this place is not gonna see me.
Okay.
8 years fast forward later, added the clock, helped people. And then I think that was the best thing. It was meant for me because then I realized how much you can help people in so many different ways and landed me here.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Like, how, first of all, in your field, what do you learn to try to understand human beings and how to talk to them? Like, are you studying the psyche and, like, you know, their temperaments, everything? Like, how do you actually do that?
Everything. You're just looking at how everything's connected, right? So how does your environment, how does your mental state, how does your upbringing impact, you know, the different stages of your life, because we all start one way, but doesn't mean we're going to finish one way. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of that, a lot of paying attention to what's different for certain people based off of their lived environment, their culture, their experiences. And, you know, I always say the best way to look at it is we can be standing in this exact same space and looking forward. And somebody says, just tell me what you see. And we're all going to pick up different things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's realizing that even though somebody might be looking at the same thing or grow up from the same space, what they experience is very different. They'll tell you that you can have a house of siblings and each one can say that they're, you know, I have a different parent or I've experienced a different upbringing in the exact same house. So it's paying attention to all of that to make up who that person is. And like you said, who is this human being in front of me? What are they experiencing? What do they need support with?
And you really wanted to focus on people of color, you said.
That was a really big thing for me. Okay. I remember looking for a therapist when I wanted one back in the day. And I was like, there's not that many people that look like me. And not to say that somebody that doesn't look like me doesn't get it, but there's things that I'm going to have to explain. Mm-hmm. There's things that I'm going to have to break down. And sometimes there's not words for those things. And what I love the best is I could be in a session with someone and they're like, you know, when you re-te-te, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I get it. Like, I actually get what re-te-te means. You know what I mean? Like, that type of stuff. I don't need you to explain why you might have to second guess how somebody says something to you or why your brain is doing that. Did they say that because I'm Black? Did they say that because I'm a person of color? Or did they truly mean that, you know, I deserve to be in this space? That I call it the dance that you have to do, where you have to wonder what people are thinking about you, or did it come off intentional or not?
Right.
It's a tiring dance. And to then have to explain that dance to get help for it, like, I'd be done.
That's a
too
lot. Yo, you got a real grip on it, yo, like, professional in every way. I wanted to know, because I know a lot of people have been going through a lot in the past, you know, 3 years, 5 years. It's just been it feels like a whole different world now. Everything's been tossed upside down. And specifically for the dreamers out there, first of all, there's a lot of people who had goals and had plans and their world just turned upside down, you know? And this is the Dreams Don't Have Deadlines podcast. So we always ask this question at the end, but I really would love to know right away, like, what advice would you give to somebody who's at a crossroads in their life and wants to give up on their dream?
I always say to people that you can be good at more than one thing. Mm-hmm. I think we start with the dream from, like I said, like as a child. You heard my story. It didn't have one direction.
Right.
It moved different ways. And sometimes it might end up exactly where you intend it to be or where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so I always say to people, you can be good at more than one thing. Most of the times, whatever we're good at the core is going to show up in all the different things that we do. So even if you're doing something right now, if you're dreaming about something, you're pushing towards something, and it doesn't look exactly how you intended it, sometimes step back and be like, is this what it's meant to be? Is this how it's supposed to look like for me? Because you never know. You never know what you're going to stumble on when you start saying, like, that's my path. That's not your path. That's not your path. This one's mine. And there's a reason it might look different.
Right.
So true, man.
That's very true.
Very relatable. I think a lot of people, you know, are affected also by their age.
Like,
I was just talking to a buddy the other day, and he's approaching his 40th birthday. And he was like just depressed and down. He's like, man, you know what? I didn't think I was going to be here. I thought I was going to be more successful. I thought I was going to have kids. I'm 40 years old. I feel like my life is ending and I haven't even started, you know? And for people that are getting older, you know, how do they tackle that kind of, I don't know what it's called, it's like sabotage kind of mentality where you think that's it, I'm hitting the 40 or the 50 and I'm done.
You might want to take that number down like a whole 10. I see people like now thinking 30 is the magical number that life has to be figured out by.
Yeah,
I was like, there is no magical number. And I think social media has a big piece to play with it. Mm. The way society goes like, well, you're almost this age. Do you have a house? Do you have kids? Do you have this? And like, success looks different for every single one of us. And I think sometimes we need to sit, like whoever that person is that you're talking about, that's either 30, 40, 50. What does success look like for you? Mm. Not everybody comes with wealth. Not everybody comes with like a big house. For some people, it's like, I just want, you know, peace for my family. I want, you know, an opportunity to maybe travel a bit more. Sure. Whatever that means for you, write that down and be like, that's where I want to work towards. And how do I get there? Mm. What am I doing to get there? And then I always say, stop and pause and be like, what have I already done that's going to help me? Because a lot of times we think about just where we're going and then we're like, well, look how far I have to go. But what about what you've done that's actually going to help you attain that? That's going to help you get to that piece.
Right.
Question on how, you know, you're reflecting where you are and try to comparing with others. So a lot of times people that either come from low income housing, like I'm pretty sure everybody here in the room here grew up with not a lot of money, immigrant parents, you know, didn't have the handouts to excel in life, but they've seen a lot of struggle around them. And for me personally, when I am at a crossroads of like, I think shit is just going sideways for me, I don't know if this is a healthy habit, but then I think about people that are more poor, that have less means of having a happy life. I think about family members that are working for a dollar an hour overseas, and then I'm like, my life is pretty damn good. Now, I don't know if that's a good way of doing that, though, or a healthy one.
I think it depends on how you, what it ends up doing for you after. So when you think about that, I'm going to put it back on you. We're going to have a little therapy session for a second, okay?
Are you billing me?
I'll talk about
it. Okay.
Bill him.
Dwayne, dig out the wallet.
Bill him.
So when you think about it that way, what happens after? How do you feel?
I feel like I'm blessed.
Okay.
I feel like my life is a lot better than the majority of the world. Mm-hmm. And that really I'm probably in the top 1%, even though I might not be, you know, thinking that, you know, when you think about top 1%, you think about millionaires or whatever. But I'm like, I'm healthy. My family's alive, thank God. I have a roof over my head. I have food on the table. I know exactly what it feels like when you don't have food on the table or you're sleeping hungry.
Yeah.
So I look at all that and I'm like, what do you got complaining about, man? Grow up.
So it allows you a moment to be like, here are the things that I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
Right? Like, despite what's happening in the moment, there's a lot of things I could be happy about.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I always say, though, is sometimes we that pushes us away from feeling what we feel. Like, it's okay to be like, you know what? Today's a hard day. Like, I didn't want it to turn out like this. Here's what's in front of me. It's okay to have that happen. But then those moments that you just talked about are what's going to help you move forward.
Got it.
Despite that, there's still this.
Okay.
So I always say you're allowed to feel two things at the same time. You can be upset, you can be annoyed, you can be frustrated, but at the same time, add that gratefulness in, add that compassion to yourself to be like, and now where do we move? Where do we go next?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I'm always like, it could be worse.
Yeah.
I'm always saying that to myself, but then I'm like, is that even healthy?
You it's know? Health. It's not bad. Okay. It's just that I don't want you to sit there and be like, "What I can never be." Kind of because it starts to mask the fact that you could be upset. Mm. We're allowed to be upset when things don't go the right way. It's a feeling. It's an emotion that comes up for a reason. And I think a lot of those emotions we feel are so taboo. Like, oh no, wait, I'm upset. Can't do that. No, yeah. You can. I'm angry. I can't be angry. I'm sad. I can't be sad. Yeah. You're allowed to feel it. We just have to think about what are the things. Great solution that you gave, so you don't sit in it.
True.
That's the difference.
What about you? Do you go through any like mental struggles that you ask yourself? Feel like you're a pretty sane human being.
Nah, man. Honestly, it's a daily struggle for me to, because maybe it's my ambitions. Maybe it's because I just want so much out of life, and I just want to be at a certain point that I judge myself a lot, you know. And mm-hmm. Thank God for my friends and my family to tell me that I'm actually doing something good. Because even when I do good things, I never feel like it's enough, because I'm not getting the exact result that I'm looking for, you know. And for somebody who's had a, you know, 2-decade-long music career and done so many things in the city and is so renowned for just everything that I've done and talking to kids and everything like that. And these people coming up to me and telling me that, you know, like, you had an impact on my life. Yo.
Yeah.
You are, quote unquote, I hate using the word, but legend in the city or whatever. You know, it does reassure me, but I'll still wake up the next day and be like, listen, man, I don't have a big mansion, you know what I'm saying? Like, I still gotta do the things that I gotta do to survive. I'm not in a position that I would love to be. And it does kind of like, it makes it harder. So thank God for my friends on that.
You know what, you made a really good point. And I work with a lot of high performing people. So people who are in, like, you know, athletes, musicians, artists, producers, things of that nature. And when you're in those type of careers, I feel like there's always next. Like, you don't get to stop and sit and be like, oh, okay, I did this. It's like, great, you did that. Now let's see how we can like triple that. Let's see how we can make it bigger. So you have to think about, like I said, your experience, your environments, how it was fostered, because at the end of the day, there's a reason why you're kind of that person that goes like, keep going, keep going, keep going, like little Energizer bunny, right? You don't stop.
It's true.
Your thoughts are going, what's next? What's next? Yeah. And so I sit with a lot of people that deal the exact same thing that you deal with, is like, how do I stop myself from always going to what's next and get a chance to appreciate like where I'm sitting in the moment? Because it's not easy.
It's not.
Let's talk about that in your profession, speaking with athletes, creatives, you know, high performing individuals. Did you just have a fascination with sports that you were like, hey, I want to talk to people within that field?
No, it actually just came from when you're thinking of like the places that mental health is stigmatized. Mm. And I was like, it's stigmatized in the communities I grew up in. It's stigmatized in sports. And we kind of all seen it. And we've seen a lot of shifts with athletes more openly speaking about their mental health, especially in many high performing spaces, whether you're a CEO of a company, whether you're an artist, you're a director, you're a producer, any of those spaces, you're like, people can't see. It's almost like people aren't allowed to see that I'm not doing well. Right? Because I got to make sure everything is put together. I got to make sure I get to the next step.
Yeah.
And I started realizing, like, these are the people that have probably the heaviest things on their shoulder. Right? And there's nowhere for them to put them down because their space doesn't allow it. How can I come in and kind of be like, let's talk about it in a very normal way that you don't have to shy away from, in a way that's not going to make you feel like you can't obtain your next record, where you can't, you know, have to sit on the bench for something. I want to have those real conversations with people.
Right.
And so I used to just talk about mental health, like how we're talking about it now, like really general, not using all the stigmatized words. I'll never forget, like, when I told my dad I was going to become a psychotherapist, he's like, oh, you want to work with mud people, right? And I was like, no, like, dad.
That's what my dad would say. Yeah.
And I was like, no, like, I'm trying to work with people to like help them do this. And now my dad's like, oh, my daughter, you know, they can tell you what it is.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have, and I never spoke to him directly about what it was. He just heard the conversations. He'd listen to stuff like this.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I get it now. I see what you do. I see how you help people. So I said, those spaces need just as much help, and those spaces don't actually always have access to it. And that's how I ended up in there.
Yeah. Mm. And how has it been, you know, working with people within the NBA and these high performing athletes? Do you see that there's a difference in their personal life and professional life when they're able to talk to someone like you?
What I've seen for all the people that I do work with, and even in that space included, is that it's nice to have somebody that looks at you as just a human being, right? Because I think spaces for high performing people, whether we're talking about athletes or those in like certain creative industries, they have like a name, a title, a position, this, right? Yeah. And that's how everybody sees them. Like you said, they see me as the legend.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, but this legend got shit going on, right? There's things happening.
Yeah.
And so what I like is I get to come in the space and be like, let's rip all that off. Let's rip off your title. Let's rip off all these things. Just talk to me.
Right.
Right. Like, how's your mom? How's your this? How's your blah? And like having somebody in that space that you can just talk to about you. And it doesn't have to impact anything that you're doing. That's what I get to bring. And I feel like that's what makes a difference for people, whether it's on and off the court, whether it's in their production spaces. I think that's what it does.
I feel like that's necessary, yo. You know, not everybody has that person to talk to in their life, you know, and it can definitely take its toll if it's not, I don't want to say checked, but if it's not, you know, talked about 100%. At all, you know, it can, your mind can go wild into crazy different places if you're not actually speaking about these things. I would love to talk about parents and
baby boomer parents especially.
Right.
Real baby boomer parents.
Yeah, with the generational stigmas with therapy and relationships. So I don't know how I want to word this question, but there is, like you said, the baby boomer parents out there who don't believe in therapy. They're like, yo, I need that, I want that, can't take care of it, no problem, right? And but I feel like they're harboring so much, the most out of everybody maybe, and then that kind of trickles down into children and then children's children and generation. Because I know that, you know, I have a lot of friends who, you know, didn't have the best relationships with their parents. And they're trying to do the exact opposite of what their parents did. Mm-hmm. And then in doing that, the child I don't want to say better or worse, but like you still run into the same kind of problems, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is like, with baby boomer parents now, do you talk to them at all about therapy? Do you have clients like that? And not to get specific, but like, I guess what would you tell anybody from that generation about therapy?
I feel like it's that generation that they might not be the ones that are easily going to gravitate towards being in a therapy space, sitting with someone like me. However, what I've started to recognize is that those are the ones who are maybe not going to understand what therapy is, but they will maybe take some time to be like, what is my kid's going through something? My child's going through something. They're trying to tell me something. I don't get it. And I might not take the time to understand it, but I want to make sure they have access to someone. I want to make sure they have support. So what I've actually started recognizing is a lot of parents reaching out and saying like, hey, my son or daughter has something going on.
Right.
I don't get this space. I don't know what it's from. I don't know the difference between this, this, and this, but can you tell me where to start? And to me, that's huge, right? You don't have to understand the whole thing, but you can maybe understand that I can't go any further with them from what I learned, what I was taught. And I always say, especially, you know, around our age group and like seeing our parents, I was like, sometimes you're like, I can't blame them for what they don't know.
Right.
Like, I can't be mad at the fact that they didn't have these type of conversations that we're now having. But what I can say is, here's what I need. Here's what we need to go forward. And so let's start there. Right.
Yeah. I think also a part of it is like my parents are immigrants and we're first generation and they come from the Middle East. And I think a lot of times is when you're coming from war-torn places or highly PTSD or traumatic places and them coming over here to build a better life, it's the last thing on their mind to check their mental health because they also didn't have the opportunity, I find, especially with social media, how open we are talking about it right now, especially right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think they got the opportunity to do so. There are also people of color. So the sad part is in the 80s and 90s, they didn't really have a high priority to anybody paying attention to them. Mm-hmm. They weren't really looked at as first-class citizens or human beings. Mm-hmm. And now that we're here, you know, hopefully we can kind of pave a road forward for the next generations. But I do find it's probably going to be very difficult to convince my parents, for example, to go to therapy.
Exactly.
Because they're going to be like, it's $150 and now what am I doing? You know what I can do with $150? I can eat all week. It's like, what about your mental health? Mental health in your ass. You know, right? Just like,
We need food on the table.
So I find that it's probably going to be more difficult. I wanted to ask about your parents.
Uh-huh.
Do they talk to a therapist?
So you know what? You make a really good point. I'll add the piece with my family in a second. Mm. But we can't discredit how they had to cope. Mm. Right? Like you have no choice for a lot of them. It's like, well, I can't take the time to sit and talk to someone because I'm working from this time to this time. Where am I going to find
it? I don't have the space.
I don't have sick pay. You're right. This is a job I just got coming to this country. I have to, you know, I have to put everything in. And for them, I think a lot of the things that they're taught is like, oh, when all of this is done, like everything will be okay. Once you buy the house, once you take care of your kids, once you have all these things, then that stability will come. Then your mental health will be okay. So I think they had to cope how they had to. They didn't really have a choice. And that's why I say we can't discredit what they had to do in order to get by.
Right.
But we can understand what we can now do in order to get by. And like with my parents, no, they don't go see a therapist. Yeah. I agree with you. They're not getting to that space. But I love the understanding that they have for my nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. right? They're like, oh, it's okay. Or they'll talk to their other friends and be like, you know, my data does this. Mm-hmm. Like, she should go see someone. Like, mm-hmm. that type of thing. They're not going to do it. But the conversations they're having are more understanding about emotions
right.
or feelings. Like I said, I won't get them to sit in this chair, but I can get them to have a real conversation about something now. And that's a big, big change.
Huge.
So just, I guess, for the audience, trigger warning, we're going to talk about a very highly sensitive subject right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to talk about suicide.
Okay.
You know, how sensitive that topic is, how important it is. Especially with the pandemic, as Juice mentioned, you know, there was definitely
rates are going up.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a real struggle. But I think as a society, we don't fully understand what people might be going through or how to help them. So I'm sure people that are watching and listening have had a friend or have a current friend that might be going through some tendencies that might lead to suicide. And so this would be a great opportunity for us to talk about, you know, how do we understand people that are going through it? What are signs and how to help them? Because I'll be honest for myself, I've been guilty of judging mm-hmm. people. You know, people that I've known or around my circle that have committed suicide. And I've done a very horrible thing where I would think it would be cowardly to do so. Mm-hmm. But now my mindset is a little different because I'm like, I have no clue what they went through to get to that point. Mm-hmm. So in your field of practice, how do you help people that are going through it? And how can we as a society help others that might be going through it?
I think the way that this conversation, I want to start by saying thank you to both of you, because this conversation is helping people to say that, like,
appreciate it.
You know what? I'm feeling something. I'm allowed to feel something. And what most people do is they bottle these feelings up. They feel like they have nowhere to go. They mm-hmm. feel like nobody understands them. And it's just me by myself. Yeah. So I got to hold everything in. And the more you hold things in, we talk about, like, you know, like you see people shake that like pop can or bottle and eventually it explodes and it erupts. And imagine all that happening inside. Like that eruption could be going on inside someone and they're holding it in, have nowhere to go. And it's like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. And so one of the underlying factors of, you know, somebody attempting suicide or things of that nature is because they're struggling with some type of mental health. Right? They're struggling with some type of illness, whether that's depression, anxiety. Depression's one of the most popular ones, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have nowhere to put it, if you have no outlet for it, it just feels like there's nothing left, mm-hmm. right? And so I think to your question, realizing that people go through things, a lot of people assume that if I talk to somebody who might be, you know, thinking about suicide, is that going to make it worse, right? Am I going to lead them to doing something? And I said, no. You know, what's really misunderstood is the fact that they usually want an outlet. We just talked about that.
Right.
So if you talk to them and be like, hey, I notice a change in behavior. Pay attention to what somebody used to do that they're no longer doing. Are they saying a lot of like almost final goodbye type of conversations? Like, what are you noticing about that? And if you see that, be like, hey, you're not like, you know what I mean? Like, I've been around you for a long time. I'm noticing these things. Like, is there something you want to talk about? Is there something I can do to help?
Right.
And if you feel like uncomfortable to be like, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to put that on me. You don't have to be like, I notice this. Can I get you support? Can I help you find resources? You don't have to be the support in order to support someone.
Maybe that's the key, because people feel like if they do mention it, they have to be the support for them now. And that might be too much to bear for one person. Even though you want to help that person, you don't want to be the that difference that yeah. makes them, you know what I mean?
You feel awkward a
yeah,
little bit.
It's like, is this all this weight that's on me yeah. now, right? So, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a yeah. lot to take on, right? And so I say help channel the support. Help right. them find a way to navigate things. You know, the number of people that have to have that thought about what to do or is this just me or is life feels like it's too much to hold usually comes from something. It's a bunch of things brewing at the same time. So if there's anybody that's listening to this
right.
And you're feeling like things are brewing, I don't know what to do with them, like you don't have to navigate it on your own. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you this again, you do not have to navigate it by yourself. There are people like myself, there's other individuals who are willing to support to be like, let's lower the fizz that's gonna happen. Let's lower the eruption. Let's yes. figure out what we have to do for that
yes.
so that, you know, you can stay around and figure out what else is here for you in this life, because it's more than just the thoughts and feelings that you have internally.
So what are examples of, like, you know, quote unquote cries for help?
You know? I would say one, somebody might, you know, maybe send texts, like I said, that seem very final, right? Like things like that. Mm-hmm. They might be really introverted and they isolate themselves. They don't want to be around someone and they're probably a very outgoing person, right? Like if you notice a change in behavior, like
right.
you see the other side of the spectrum,
right?
So stuff like that. If you notice sometimes they say about people like giving things away to be like, yeah, you can have that. Don't need that anymore. Take this. Like those are different signs that somebody might be going through something.
Right.
And like I said, the best thing to do is just ask,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. Like the signs and symptoms are gonna look different for everyone. Those are some of the general ones, but just ask. Because if there's nothing wrong with the person,
yeah.
does it hurt that yeah. to ask? No.
And not judge, I'm assuming. You know,
right?
Don't judge them.
Oh, I love that. Do yeah. not judge someone for it, right? Do not judge for not knowing what they're going through. Do not judge for being like, well, why can't you handle that?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not you, mm-hmm. right? We all handle things differently. You don't know what the basis of that is for someone. So ask the question, if you can, without judgment, without assumption. And if you're like, I can't do that, fine, but I noticed something, help them find someone that they can talk to about it.
That's dope.
And finally, what should we do as friends to help them? Like, are we supposed to recommend a therapist for them to see or go see a center or some social services? Like, what exactly can you do?
I feel like it's asking them what they need.
Okay.
Right? Specifically asking what they need maybe at the moment. Be like, yeah. here are some things that, like, you know, it could be a center. Do you want to call like this anonymous line? Do you want to text this person? Maybe you don't want to see somebody.
Right.
Maybe you want to just text us and maybe they can help you from there.
Mm.
Do you want me to help you find a therapist?
Right.
You can just give somebody the resources or you can just ask, what do they need? They might tell you like, I just need someone to listen.
Got
and
it.
You're like, oh, maybe I can, or if I can't, here, let's go in this direction. Or they're like, I just, you know, want somebody to understand what I'm going through. Ask them what they need
yeah.
and then figure out if it's something you have the capacity to give. If it's beyond you, find out where you can get that support.
Got it.
Love it.
Yeah, man. Some great advice.
Very great.
I think it's time for us to do some exercises.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Not some exercises, but some techniques. Push-ups? Yeah, no, right? You're depressed? Give me 20. No, we're going to do some, I guess, some therapy type of exercises where we got ice cubes and sparkling water.
I don't know what's going on.
I'm not
right
really
now,
sure, you know, but like, it was requested by Janelle. So it's in the freezer, guys.
I'm going to put you on to work. Okay, do you want me to explain what we're doing? Are you going to explain?
Yeah,
what's
going to
be more fun? Us knowing or not knowing?
Well, I kind of have to tell you what you're doing.
Okay,
okay,
right?
Okay. It's okay, Alicia.
We'll
you can be in the shot. You can be in the shot. This is Tomb Raider, Angelina Jolie in the mix.
Like, so we were talking about earlier how, like, depression, anxiety are, like, the roots of, you know, what one of the most popular mental health concerns that people have and untreated and kind of left to its own demise to run its own course. It can get in the way of life. It can be really challenging for people. So, not all anxiety is horrible, right? Like not everybody goes to a crippling level of anxiety, but anxiety is something that you feel. So it can get in the way. And people are always like, well, Janelle, what do I do when I get really anxious? And, you know, I might have a presentation to do, or I might just be thinking about something and my body starts taking over and it feels uncontrollable. So our body usually responds, either one of you in any situation, when you get anxious, what do you notice about yourself?
Shoulders are tense.
Okay.
Spazzing, and then I have like self-sabotage things in
my
head.
You start thinking about a lot of stuff. You really kind of go inward in your body and just focus on it.
Yeah, I get heated.
What about you?
When I have anxiety?
Just anxious about anything.
Just anxious?
Performing before maybe, something like that. Does that happen at all?
Sometimes, yeah. Like, but I don't know. You know, I think the tenseness a little bit, you know, but I don't know.
Okay. No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for some people that feeling like you described can come up, and for others, it can be so hard to manage that their body starts getting hot, right? And they're like, oh, I feel super uneasy. Yeah. I start sweating.
Start sweating everywhere.
I feel like my body, some people are like, they're telling me that their body starts itching. Mm. And so for those, it could kind of move its way into a panic attack, or a panic attack cause somebody to feel more anxious, right? Or thinking of a panic attack cause somebody to feel more anxious. So there's this little technique that you can do. Okay. So I'm going to ask both of you to grab a cup.
Here we go.
And a straw.
Okay.
And pour a little bit of that Perrier into there.
Okay. Before you get started. It's a 2023 vintage Perrier.
Only the finest. Only the finest to help your body cope with things.
Got too much lotion on your hand. Yeah, just get some dry Middle Eastern hands.
There you go. You got it.
As much as you want. It's fine.
Tell me what to stop. I'm thirsty. No, I'm just kidding.
It's good?
That's good.
Are you doing it too?
Nope, I'm going to just instruct the two of you. There you go. And then get your straw.
Okay.
And you put it in there. And so one way to help your body, like we talked about, your body's kind of doing its thing. It's saying something's wrong. I got to protect you. I got to alert you that you're feeling a type of way.
Can I just mention that the staff is eagerly awaiting for us to do something stupid right now? So everybody here, the crew.
Kind of want to just blow bubbles. I'm sorry.
So what's going to happen is I'm going to ask you, I'll tell you when, but you're going to take a sip, and I want you to pay attention to like kind of the temperature that's going through. And I'm going to ask you like some questions to think about while you're drinking it. Mm. I want you to pay attention to the temperature when it goes from like really cold to it starts going down your throat and it starts getting warmer to the point where your body's adjusting it, you know, for digestion.
Yes.
I want you to pay attention when the bubbles start to fade. How many bubbles do you start feeling? The reason I'm asking you to do this is because we just talked about your body kind of going off, right? It's like, I'm itching, I'm hot, I'm tense. And you want to be like, if I can focus on something else, it takes away from my body doing all that alertness.
True that.
It helps you calm down your anxiety. It helps you calm a panic attack if that's happening. So this is a lot of people who have anxious moments maybe at work or whatever. It's like they might pour some, you know, carbonated water into a thing and just sip it. Like, and just be like, all right, I'm having a moment. Let me just sip it. And nobody knows. And that's the best part about this. I know right now because y'all have this cup with a straw.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a regular day.
You would never know.
You would know that that's what you're doing, right?
And it calms your anxiety.
And it calms you down.
Yeah.
So I want y'all to try it. I'm going to tell you, take the straw.
It's like a slow sip, eh?
Slow sip and pay attention. So go ahead. Okay. I'll give you some prompting things.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Right? Phil.
Pay attention to the change in temperature. Is it going from cold to warm? The bubbles, and keep trying and keep trying different stuff, see what you can notice. The bubbles that come up. How many? Do you notice when it starts fading, it's not so carbonated anymore? If you really pay attention, sometimes you could feel it really going down your throat.
I can feel it right now, just the coolness.
Yeah, and it sometimes hits your stomach like, oh, I could feel the coolness coming down here.
Especially when it's the first meal of the day and you're drinking carbonated water.
So just imagine if you were anxious and you're just like closing your eyes and you're really doing this and paying attention. That could stop for a few seconds. You focusing on my itchy body, my tense shoulders, my irritated stomach, whatever it is that might cause you to feel anxious. And this is any level of anxiousness, whether it's just a presentation or a crippling level of anxiety, this can help.
So I'm going to do this for the next time. I'm a comedian, so when I go up stage, like, I still panic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have sparkling water with me all the
time. No, this is dope because you, like you said, you're focusing on something else, right? Like even hunger. Right?
Mm.
So a lot of people out there are doing intermittent fasting right now, and I was just reading up on it, and you know, you reach that threshold when you start getting really hungry, and they say like the best thing to do is to distract yourself and do some work, do something that's gonna take away from there, right? If you're sitting down on the couch and watching TV, you're gonna get more hungry, you're chilling out, you're in a thing. But if you're doing something, an activity that distracts you from it, maybe an exercise or just going for a walk or something like that, you stop thinking about the hunger.
Exactly.
Right? So I think this is kind of similar to that.
Yeah, that's a good example of how many times we've all like been like, oh snap, the day's done. I didn't eat all day, right?
Eat. Yeah,
because we've been doing something.
Yeah.
We can, our mind's amazing, but it's also stupid at the same time because we can distract it really well.
Yeah.
And we can tell it like, okay, let's do this instead. So that's one thing that you could try. I'm going to give you all another one.
Okay.
Ready?
I'm ready.
I'm gonna lie.
Should I pour some more Perrier?
I have no idea what you just said. I zoned out.
Like, I was just drinking.
I zoned out.
I was thinking about a million bubbles in my stomach.
Okay, so the next thing you're gonna do is actually with the ice. Oh. So you're gonna have to grab some of this ice. I'm gonna move it closer.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're gonna take, I'll tell you what to do first. You're gonna take an ice cube and you're gonna hold it in your hand, right? And very similar, we're kind of distract our body, like we're talking about being anxious. And I want you to just hold the ice cube and notice, like, do you feel the temperature again? Do you feel it melting? What do you notice? Does it get to the point where it's like, no, it's too cold, I have to, like, drop it, right?
Yes.
I want you to try the same exercise, but now focus on the changes of the ice cube.
Go for it. Both hands?
You could use one ice cube. Just use one. Just use one. Yeah. All right. All right.
Ooh, that's cold.
All right, so you're feeling one, that it's really cold. Close your eyes.
Starting to warm up.
Okay, you notice it warming up?
Yeah.
Do you notice anything dripping?
Yes.
Okay. Is it unbearable?
It's cold.
I gotta move it around a little bit to make it.
Okay, I gotta move it so it's not there anymore, so it doesn't just hurt one spot?
One spot, yeah. Ooh.
Are you ready to put it down?
No.
No.
Okay. Does it feel enjoyable
kinda
at all?
I like it.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, not. Yeah.
Okay, okay. Okay, okay. I'm looking at both of y'all like, oh gosh, this is done. And I see you moving it around because I didn't tell you what to do with it. You're moving it around so it doesn't feel.
Yeah,
so all right.
Cool. Yeah.
Go ahead, stop. You can put it down.
All right. I'll tell you the truth, Jenna. Whatever you want to know.
Okay.
The dripping sensation is like a little annoying for me.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Because now you're like, oh, it's dripping. I don't want to get it all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't want to have it all over me. I want to put this down.
Exactly.
If I'm anxious, or I'm panicking about something, a real way for me to be like, oh, now I'm focusing on the ice cube.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not focusing on what my body is doing. I'm not focusing on, you know, some people do this when they're flying. Anybody has a fear of flying, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I'm going to focus on the plane going up, but now this ice is dripping. It's on my. I don't want it on my pants. I don't want it here.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay attention to the temperature. Like I said, we can distract our bodies from going off and doing what it's doing to alert us because it's trying to help us.
Yes.
But sometimes it's not so helpful.
Yes.
Right? So those are two techniques. If you're somebody that's anxious, you're somebody that has panic attacks, if you're somebody who just, your body does more of the work than you would like it to do, something to try that could be a little inconspicuous. You can have your, like, again, ice and like your water bottle and be like, I just need to do this for a second.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you go away and
that's
yourself,
so cool. So, yeah. I love that. I think a lot of people can learn from that and use that technique whenever they're feeling anxious.
100%. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't realize until you said it now why I itch a lot.
Oh.
Because, like, I'll itch a lot of times, and I'm like, there's nothing to itch. There's no bites, there's no nothing.
I was gonna say it's the lotion. You don't use any.
No, I don't got that kind of lotion.
So for your body, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, buddy.
Never mind.
He's like, I don't wanna know where this conversation was gonna go.
Sorry, no, we're talking about serious adult things here.
Yes.
But no, I'm realizing now that's probably why I itch a lot. Okay. It's because I'm anxious without even knowing I'm anxious.
Yeah.
And people don't realize what their sign is. So pay attention to, like, maybe next time you're like, you know, what does my body do when I'm actually anxious? Like,
right.
My stomach, mine is very different. Like, my stomach gets, like, really nauseous. Like, I feel like I'm kind of sick. And I love public speaking. I love presenting stuff. I'm always, like, on different panels or platforms about stuff.
Yeah.
And I still, like you said, get anxious about that first thing. And I know, okay, I know I've done this before. I know I can do it.
Yeah.
But my body just says, look, you got to prepare you. This is how we prepare you. And I was like, you need to calm down because I'm not going to go in there with this being a hot mess. What do we have to pay attention to? What do we have to remind ourselves? Sometimes you need something physical to help you do that.
That's a great
gem right there.
Yeah, I'm going to do that from now on.
You don't have deadlines. We're giving it to y'all, man. Come on.
For the freeness.
Talking about pricing. So I'm a big advocate for therapy.
Okay.
I've been on and off going to therapists now for 5 years.
Nice.
And I've been preaching to my friends that don't want to talk to anybody, that think it's a waste of time. The number one excuse I think we all get, I can't afford it, bro.
Yeah.
I can't afford this. Yeah. This is way too expensive. How do you tackle that?
Man, the government needs to tackle that. That's what they need to do. They need to make sure
Reach.
That mental health is covered within the supports that we have. Like, how do you expect people to continue to support an economy and do what they have to do if they don't feel good, right?
Yeah.
So I think that needs to be covered, at least partially or something, so that people can get what they need to keep going.
Yes.
And then one thing that I've done is at my practice, I've offered, and I now have a low-cost therapy program.
Okay.
So it is $80 plus tax. You can work with a registered psychotherapist,
wow.
and they can help you through things. And that's a really good price,
right,
for those who 100%. Find it, you know, a barrier. So I'm glad that I can offer that program of help. And the other day was kind of neat when we put it out there, and I was just like, this is why I love the community and love social. This is why social media is a good thing, because I put it out there, I let people know that this is here and this is what I offer. And within 2 days, I think we filled like over 40 spots of people wanting to get support. Like, that's a big deal.
Yes.
40 different people in 2 days saying, like, you know what, this might be the time, and the messages are still rolling. And so if you're listening to this and this conversation has sparked that for you and you're like, oh, I was going to say it's expensive. Well, guess what? It is not cheap, but it is cheaper. Right. And so if that can help you, more than happy to be able to support if that's the case.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I think also, like, that is a great price and a great for the value that you're going to get for that. But also, I think people should also remember that, you know, this is your body, you know, this is your temple here,
100%.
You know, so, and what you spend on it shouldn't be a problem when you know it's going to help you be better. You
100%.
Know, you don't got a problem going to the LCBO and getting a bottle of Casamigos for $80,
spending $400 on weed on a month.
You could do that. But, like, why don't you put it to something that's actually really going to help you be a better person, live longer, be nicer to your friends, just less anxiety, like, all the above, you know?
Yeah. And just try and see what it does, right? Like, I always say that it's almost like buying a new car. I think of going to therapy, people are always like, well, what's going to therapy like? I said, you got to shop around sometimes, right? So while I do offer this program, maybe the therapists at my practice are not a fit for you, right? Yeah. You're like, I might have to go look for someone else. And, you know, there's places like Althea Therapy, Psychology Today, all those things that can help you find someone. Most people offer like a free 15-minute consultation. I offer a whole free session for the first one. Try it out and see, like, do we vibe? Do we connect? If not, you go pick a next one, right? Yeah. It takes a little bit of work, but it's worth it, like you said.
Yeah.
You got to shop around and do what you got to do to see what fits.
It's an amazing point, because, I mean, like, I think I started noticing it when a big article came out, LeBron James spends $2.5 million a year on his body.
Right.
But I'm like, if I think about it, if he's making $100 million, 2.5% of his income is really not that bad for him to spend on his body. So I started thinking, I'm like, what's 2.5% of my income? And let me put that into my health and wellness, which is one of the things, which is therapy.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, if you look at the grand scheme of things, if you're spending 2.5 or just 5% to a body that's supposed to do everything else, it's really not that big of a chunk.
And I always put it in the, like, context of, like, if your brain is the one that controls everything else, why don't we do what it needs?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why aren't we taking care of it?
Yeah,
and that's the part that you have to control.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's interesting how we'll go to the dentist, like, on a regular, like, most people, right? They'll be like, oh, let me make sure I get my appointment with my dentist, or I'll pre-schedule it to make sure I have that follow-up done. But, like, we don't think about the fact that our brain needs that same upkeep, right? Our own, like, psyche needs that same upkeep. Are you putting that in? Are you doing that?
Got it. Another topic that we haven't covered, just want to kind of touch on it, is relationships.
Ooh.
You know, communication, I think, is probably the biggest challenge in any type of relationship, whether it's friendship, whether it's a loved one, your partner, etc. And a lot of times we're not good at expressing our feelings to that person that we have a relationship with. You know, how do you tackle that obstacle of not communicating well, you know?
The hardest part with relationships, I'd say, yes, communication, but, like, the assumption comes with it, right? Like, we're all assuming, like, well, why so-and-so don't know how I feel? Like, can't you see it? Can't you see I'm upset? I threw this to you versus passing it to you, right?
Yeah,
like, how you
pick
fine,
up on that.
Right? Like, I said fine, not fine. Yeah, like, why didn't you hear the tone in my voice, right? And so, like, we kind of make these assumptions or want people to read our minds. And I was like, why don't we communicate what's going on in our mind so that this person could kind of come back and understand things.
Right.
One of the things I always say when we're communicating is, instead of assuming things, why don't you say what's happening and ask the person what they heard?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, oh, I said X, Y, and Z. I'm feeling this. Be like, and then somebody else might be like, well, that's not what I heard. It's like, well, what did you hear? And be like, no, that's not how I meant it. Here's what I'm trying to communicate. Here's what I'm trying to say. And it kind of goes back like ping pong. And you go back and forth. I say this works in like all relationships, mm-hmm. Where you have a challenge communicating. Go yes. back and forth and ask that question to what you heard to make sure that you're on the same page at the end.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm definitely need
to. If I was in a relationship, I'd try it.
Yeah.
You try it? But I think the hard piece with too, a relationship is that they change so often. Mm-hmm. And we change as people. So, of course, the relationship's going to change.
Yeah.
Right? We're all growing. We're all changing. You go to therapy. You're like, I'm going to try this now. Like, here's now what I right. wanted. Right? Right. And so now right. the other person has to adjust to it. But if right. you don't communicate, if you just assume, makes a rift. So mm-hmm. Just remember that we're all changing. That's why you have to communicate. That's why you can't just sit on assumptions.
Well, speaking of relationships, you know, this is a topic we've touched a couple of times on the podcast where, you know, us as entrepreneurs, creatives, artists mm-hmm. have a very difficult time finding someone to have a relationship with because
Preach.
Our dream is number one. And the person with us a lot of times feels they're secondary to mm-hmm. that. And so one of the topics we would have is, you know, I believe we're both advocates thinking that, no, you can find someone out there that can match well with you to accelerate in your life and actually help you achieve those dreams.
Blind optimism is what I call it.
There you go, blind optimism. But a lot of times people are like, oh no, you know, that'll never work. You know, there's yeah. no way someone's gonna understand my lifestyle, understanding that I have to fully dedicate to my craft, to my art, to my business. So yeah. what do you say to that? For those people that just don't think it's possible.
I definitely think it is possible. Like you said, it's finding that person who understands, but have you communicated what this relationship will look like, mm-hmm. right? Like, are you letting people know that, like, this is what I do day to day, so this takes up a lot of my space, but I'm willing to give you the other time that I have. And I don't say leftover.
Yeah.
Don't say like, well, what I got left over, I'm gonna give to you. No. This is this time,
right.
and here is this time, and I'm willing to commit in this relationship and give you that time,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I can do anything with it, but I want to commit that with you. And are you okay with that?
Right.
Are you okay with us exchanging it this way?
Right.
And there might be somebody who also needs this chunk of time over here for their craft, and so they're like, yeah, we'll commit to whatever is here on this side that we're intentionally going to use for each other. Right. So I do think it's possible. I think you just have to be really open and honest about it and remind yourself that it could change. Right. Like
yeah.
you might be that person that spends this time here. And then as you are in it, you start to realize I want more than just this. And maybe I'm cutting down that piece to here now.
Right.
And now I have more to spend on my relationship or whoever I want to like interact with intentionally.
True.
What do you think?
Blind optimism, man. I mean, I might be the wrong person to ask this question.
Because, it was the sigh for it was the
you know, you've had relationships like, and you know it's been challenging with yeah, your career. So
definitely it hasn't worked out well for me. And that yet. Is because yet, thank you. Just because
Shanti's waiting for me.
the priority I take in my craft, like as yeah. we were talking about earlier, how much I want to do certain things in my life and how that takes priority for me, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like, you know, me being a father, and that it would take a very special human being to like be a part of my life, you mm-hmm. know? But I'm also realizing that if I want that, I'm gonna have to kind of make room for it at yeah. some point, you know what I mean? Like whether it be like setting hours out of my day where it's like, yo, you can't be working now, you know? Even if I don't have anybody in my life. So I'm learning because when I'm in a relationship, it's like, no, it's all your fault and you're not giving me my time. But as I've been single, I'm trying to do the steps to kind of just be like, you know what? Even though I'm not in a relationship, if I was and I wanted somebody in my life, whoever that person is gonna be, I need to do certain things from now to make it happen. And that's like just that. Where I'm
that's
at.
That's proactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rochester's available, ladies. You know, and you can find him at Rochester Juice. Put you out there. So just to wrap it up, I want to talk about the topic of financial stress and stubbornness. Mm. So I had a discussion with my girlfriend yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it was similar to the fact of like, you know, I didn't think I would be here today. Like we were talking earlier, I thought I was going to be a millionaire by now, a successful actor. You see me on billboards, etc. Didn't happen that way, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Life has its own ways of working itself out. And then she was asking me, in 5 years, if you're not at the position you want to be at, are you going to be okay with it? And I'm like, there's no other option, Shadell. You know, that has to happen, okay. You know? I have to be able to make enough income to retire my parents, to have a life financially free for myself, and to eventually start a family, because the last thing I will absolutely refuse is for them to have the same experience I had, which is grow up in a household where it's filled with financial stress, mm-hmm. and low finances. Now, I'm stubborn in the way where I'm like, there's no other option. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not going to accept any other option. Mm-hmm. Is that the right mentality, though?
I mean, you're using it to push yourself. Mm. I completely get that. And you're like, I want to be able to do all these things. The only thing I would say be mindful of is... I love how you said it. You didn't say just the money, right? The first thing you said, I want to be a millionaire, blah, 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 that type of thing. But then when you were talking about it just now, you said, I want to be able to give my parents retirement. I want to be able to make sure they're comfortable and happy. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to have a family. Those things aren't always associated with $1 million, mm-hmm. right? And I want you to kind of allow yourself to be like, this is what I want. Like, reach for those things and be like, yes, it may come in the form of $1 million. Mm-hmm. It might come in the form of a few $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that look like in order? What do I want to do? Those are the things that you want to do.
Okay. That's true. I feel like Juice is very well acquainted with this topic in terms of, you know, how have you been able to tackle the fact of, like you said, you wake up and you're like, I'm not where I want to be.
Yeah.
You know, are you just being like, you know, I'm grateful for what I have?
It's a daily struggle for me, man. You know, I made promises to my family. I made promises to my daughter, who has special needs. And, you know, I feel like I haven't fulfilled on it. So mm-hmm. it does weigh down on me a lot. But I got some good advice from a friend, like, way back. And I always just go to this. And it's just, he's just like, you know, like, you can only do what you can when you can do it. Like, control the things you can control and let everything else kind of fall where it has, you know? True. And I'm trying to get better at that, you know? Every day I wake up feeling like 24 hours is not enough for me to get the things that I have to do. And I feel like there's a time bomb ticking and I'm always like late to cut the cord every day, you know?
Yeah.
But I do have to realize that, you know, like, in my age now, I've realized patience, you know, and the process of certain things. So those are my kind of like,
you both actually spoke to one thing I want to add to this is that sometimes we put our mind to like where we want to go. And that's the only place that you can see. And sometimes the places that you want to go stop you from recognizing what you have accomplished,
right.
Where you no longer are. Right. True. Like in this whole beginning of this whole conversation, we're all talking about like coming from lower income families and all that stuff. And if we keep just looking at the future, you don't see the fact that like, hey, you've moved from that spot.
Yeah,
that's
you're
true.
Not there anymore. So you still have the ability to keep going. But again, focus on what you can control in the moment. And that's what pushes you forward. If you keep looking at the future and avoiding your current moment, how do you get there?
That's so true. That's funny because I went to a self-help seminar a week ago.
Okay.
I thought this was going to be the corniest shit of my life. I'm like, I hate these type of seminars. And it was corny. But one thing I got out of it, which was really nice, they were like, have you ever sat down and written 10 achievements that you've had in your life? And if you get by number 10 and if there's more, keep writing them, because we have a tendency to focus on our failures so often.
Sure.
And I was like, holy shit, I don't think I've ever done that. I don't think I've actually sat down and written things I've achieved in a positive light, because I'm always thinking negative about my failures. Yeah. So it's a really good point.
Put that where you work every day, where you do what you have to do every day. Because like you said, your mind every day goes to be like, I shouldn't even be here. I should be past here. Yeah. But then you look up and you're like, but we got to there.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
true.
We got it. 'Cause sometimes you need that visualization. It's very much like what we did here. Sometimes you need to tell your brain, but there's this. Don't forget about this. Our brain has a tendency to shift to a negative space. Mm. It's like a natural bias that it just wants to go to. And I say sometimes it's like driving a manual car. You kind of have to put it in gear where you want it to go, because it's going to take you down that road. Look how many times we'll never forget, like, that bad customer service experience, the place that we went into that treated us really bad, and you're like, I'm not going there again. And you tell everybody, remember that time? This, like,
sunrise. Never going back.
Exactly what your brain can do to you.
That's true. All right, you hear that, Marwan? Watch this back. Tell yourself you ain't making spam with ramen noodles and ketchup no more for spaghetti, buddy. You made it. To end it off, I want to just talk lightly about financial stress. This is something I hear everybody around me. We live in a very expensive city. Inflation's high. Everything is expensive, and our life revolves around accumulating more debt and just worrying about financial stress every single day. So people might be watching this and are going through it. What advice have you given people when they're just only focusing about their financial stresses?
I mean, it's hard to move away from it when it controls so much of what we do.
Yeah.
And I say to people, like, sometimes it sounds super cliche, but like writing down what you really spend, because we all can be like, I don't spend that much money. Like, I probably only spend like $40 on Uber Eats a week. Like,
that's a lie.
It, right? And then they go and they're like, oh, if I sit in, I've done this. Like, I sat in sessions, be like, all right, pull up your RBC app, pull up whatever it is that you got, right?
Show me.
And I want you to add this up. And they're like, oh, snap. Yeah. Like, I spend all of this, and here I am worrying about X, Y, and Z that I don't have money to pay for, but like, here's where my money's going. Right. This is what's contributing to my stress. How do I adjust to it? I have people who are like, again, that whole 30, 40, 50, I have to be here, I should be out by now. And they're like, but I can't afford rent in Toronto. Like, who's gonna be able to do that? And I said, all right, well, you're making this assumption that you can't do it, right? We're just putting it in there. It's never gonna be attainable. Mm. But have you actually checked to see if you can? So while you're living with parent, friend, family member, why don't you try budgeting as if you were living on your own?
Yeah.
Right? Like, put aside that money to be like, okay, you'd be going to rent, you'd be going to my regular bills, and can you do it? And I've had some people be like, I'm not so broke after all, right? Like, or I can do it if I have so-and-so with me, or have this adjusted.
Yes.
And so sometimes that financial stress really is because we are afraid to look at what's actually happening.
So true.
And we avoid it. And
we're afraid to open our bank account. Right?
I don't want to go through this.
Right? And you just have things kind of going in every direction. Sometimes you got to sit down and be like, am I stressing over something that's real?
Yeah.
Or am I just running with what everyone's saying in the world?
That's great advice.
I just started financial logging just this year for the first time in my life.
Uh-huh.
And like the first month of the year, I was like, okay, so I spent more than I made. And then the second month, I was like, I spent $500 on Uber Eats.
Mm.
I was like, oh my God, this is bad. So you're absolutely right. You know,
I have apps on my phone that I was like, oh, the fact that you're on my phone means I just do it whenever. And it's my credit card saved on there. I was like, I need to get rid of you. Like, I don't think it's anything to spend $100 on this thing every once in a while. But like you said, you look at it on a grand scheme and you're like, it adds up. So do the numbers.
Do the numbers.
Do the numbers.
Well said.
Well said.
I'd like to ask one more question if we have time.
I
love sitting down and talking with you. And I know you mentioned before about like maybe the government coming in and assisting with your mental health and how important it is, you know? So I just wanted to ask you on camera, what is the change that you would love to see happen for the future?
I would love for mental health to be accessible for those that need it. Like the same way you can kind of walk in and go to the hospital and be like, I need to get checked out or find a doctor. We're talking about making sure people can keep going and build this economy, like, and sustain it. Like, we need to make sure everything is right here for people. The numbers for depression, anxiety are increasing. It went 25% during the pandemic, right? Like, why aren't we helping people so that we can have like a better world for all of us, right? So I would love for the government to step in, support, even if it's partial, for people to be like, cool, I found one for $8. I only got to pay 20 of it. That's better than nothing, right? If we can have that, that would be amazing.
Is there no therapy? Like, you can have it on your benefits, right?
Technically, if a company, if you work for a company, they can have benefits.
Certain companies.
Certain companies. Yeah.
It should be like. Yeah.
And I appreciate those companies that really do say, here's benefits, here's unlimited benefits for us. We want to give you that.
Yeah.
I wish that more and more companies would be like, let's take care of our people, because the people are the one that run the company.
Yeah.
Right? That's... If you don't take care of the people, what company do you have?
And a lot of times, well, not all, most times, people don't even spend their benefits on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
People have it just sitting there and not even touched it and left the company. And they're like, yeah, no, I never used my massage therapy, chiro or physio or psycho or whatever the case may be.
As much as we're saying it's not being utilized, I would appreciate, as much as I don't want to ever relive this pandemic thing again, I do appreciate the fact that it highlighted mental health for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And more people reached out during that time to be like, my regular coping things are not available to me. I can't go to the mall and just drop what I want to drop. What can I talk to somebody? Can I find other ways to deal with this versus masking it?
Right.
Got it. That was great.
Lastly is what's next for Janelle Peters? We talked a lot about us, our mental health, everything about it.
Yeah.
Are there programs you're excited about opening, or new initiatives, or where, you know, what people can look forward to in your career?
I want to see where I go. I know we were just talking about like a 5-year plan. Mm-hmm. I don't have one of those because I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to go next, but I know it's going to continue to be in a space that helps people. And I really try to focus more so right now. What does that look like? So I want to make a book. I want to write a book. I say make a book because it's not just writing. I'll tell you. For me, it's about, I do a lot of analogies and things and metaphors to help people understand stuff. And I want to put it into like a visual scrapbook almost for adults, because we don't like reading as much as we all say.
I hate reading.
You know, there's that pile of books on the side of your bed.
Never got read.
Really, you don't even touch. And it's like, let's have all the things that we feel, experience, and like visual metaphors almost to be like, hey, you feeling like, what do I do when I'm anxious? Or what about when I'm sad or angry? And I want to kind of collectively put that together. I call myself the visual therapist at times. So I want to create something that people can kind of have like on a coffee table book.
And just use it that way. I've seen that on your page. You do a lot of visual stuff.
That's really cool. And just one more time, look in the camera. Where can people find you?
People can find me at Janelle Peters Psychotherapy on Instagram. You can find me at jpeterspsychotherapy.com on email, website. Just type in Janelle with an H. You will find me. And if you need to get connected to help, willing to do that. Oh, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have a confession to make to you, by the way.
Me?
Yes,
okay.
To you.
All right.
So everybody remember like MySpace back in the day?
Yes.
So like I said, this has been like a full circle weekend for me where things are coming back around.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, snap. I had Pull Up as my MySpace song.
Dang.
So I was like, I had to be like, this is number two comeback.
I'm gassed now, y'all. They can't tell me nothing. Y'all can't tell me nothing.
Is Janelle Peters hiding in Rochester's DM space in the MySpace?
I was what? I was like, wait a minute. That was my MySpace.
Thank
song.
You so much, yo. You just made my day with that. Yeah, that's what's up.
That was
hilarious.
My joy.
That's amazing.
Full circle.
Well, she pulled up today.
Yeah, she did. I like that.
We got more of those coming. No, but thank you so much for your time today, Janelle.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
It really has.
I think you've helped a lot of people out today.
I hope this episode
comes out, they know where to find you. And just remember, guys, mental health is cool. You know,
it is.
You can always talk to someone. So please, if you're going through something, please talk to someone or look up Janelle online.
Thanks for having me.
It was our absolute pleasure. So this is the DDHD podcast. Dreams don't have deadlines. Yeah. My name is Marwan Manamni. I got my co-host
Rochester.
And finally, we have
Janelle Peters.
Let's give it up. That's a wrap.
Y'all are amazing.
Thank you. You made it.
Work hard and I handle my business. Look up in the sky, whole squad. Let's get it. No limit. No.